Welcome to episode 9 of the Rebel Army podcast. This week we get a look behind the scenes with Mick, the kit man at the club. Plus we look back on a successful derby win. Back for another podcast, joined as always by Aaron Howey. How are you?
Not too bad, Stephen. How are you?
Good, just survived the muck Friday night.
Yeah, I did. I stayed sheltered up in the gantry, so I was all right. I got a bit wet, but not as wet as the lads who were out on the pitch or those around the pitch. So
that was one of those mud wrestling events or something by the time the match was over.
As it went on, and it wasn't until I was... You know, when you're watching the game, you could see how bad it was getting, but when I was editing the highlights and I saw how it was at minute one and how it was at minute 90, I was like, Jesus, that was a rough 90 minutes on that
pitch. Especially the pitch close to the shed end by the Donny Ford. It was really... The ball was getting caught up there.
Yeah, you know? It seems to be down that end of the ground. It's up, that's where it is. I don't know, is there ever so slightly a little gradient, like a little hill down that way, but that seems to be the end
of
the ground.
Or coming in from somewhere else, because if you look outside the ground as well, as I was coming in the ground outside the main turnstiles and the corner there, as you go up by Derry Nan, just on the corner, it was starting to flood already, and Turner's Cross has flooded there before as well. So maybe there's some sort of, maybe off the Tramore River or something is nearby and it's coming up through the fucking shores or something.
Possibly
there.
Yeah, but that was probably one of the worst conditions.
I never remember Turner's Cross cutting up so much. It was so bad. Like,
yeah, it's had a rough time of it. The last couple of months, weather has just been freakishly bad.
Well, I've seen the farmers around about it all the time. I think it's rained non-stop since last summer, I'm sure. Like, we've had a couple of dry spells, but like,
feels like it.
Crazy. But look,
we won the game.
Great win.
Great game.
I would go as far as to say it was the best I've seen him play anyway this season.
Funnily enough, yeah, it's something we've all been saying, and Tim said it a couple of times in the press conferences, that once the pitches get better, we'll be really good. Mm. It was probably the worst pitches cut up, and it was the best we've seen us.
Don't remind you of like watching those old films of like Georgie Best or something like that, you know, like in the 60s.
The old rewind games on Sky Sports
maybe
or something.
Cork Hibs and Celtic, but there's not many videos of them, but like it was kind of like the pitches were awful, but the football was good, and there was bits of that. Like Jack was loving it. He was playing around there with the ball in the middle of the pitch, like just having a great time in the mud. Like,
it was, and the state of the clothes, the state of the jerseys afterwards, poor Mick. Had a rough weekend.
Yeah, and obviously we have him in to talk to us this week, and that was planned.
There was
a couple of
I had a couple of messages, and there was a couple of stuff came in on Instagram saying you're only doing this to keep Mick on side after the weekend you put him through. We did have this in the pipeline.
We were looking at guests, and we said this, I think maybe about 3 weeks ago, we said we must get Mick in because he's been involved in the club for such a long time. But
we kind of thought Mick would have so many stories as it is to get him in, and I'm sure after this weekend or last weekend, he's probably wanting to kill me for bringing in white jerseys this year.
No, those jerseys were in some bad state.
They were lovely when they were white, but not so much when they were brown and green and whatever other colours they were half nine Friday night.
Anything and anything there.
Yeah.
But great finishes. And there could have been more, actually.
There
were some good saves, and the ball held up a couple of times too. Like
Nathan Wood nearly scored with his first touch when he came on as well, and that was blocked. I think someone else followed up and that was saved as well. But we could have had 4 or 5, maybe even more,
easily,
which would have been great. But 3 goals, 3 points, and still top of the league. So that was a successful Friday at the office.
Yeah, and our lead stretched as well over the weekend, didn't it? Did it go to 2? Did Finn Harps draw? And
they did. They were playing early. They had the early kickoff against was it UCD they played?
Well, they played at 5 o'clock, which was unusual.
Yeah, and they were 1-0 up for a lot of the game, and it ended 1-1. I think we're top of the table. All right, I think it's 3 points in it, and I think we're 7 ahead of UCD, who are next Friday's opponents. So a win there could push us 10 ahead of them, and more ahead of Finn Harps.
It's not a bad start at all. And clean sheet at home again, which means no goals conceded at the Cross this year yet.
Yeah, and we scored into the shed as well, which was something people were saying we hadn't scored into the shed
yet this year.
But that's a quarter of the season. We're through a quarter of the season now. We've conceded 2 goals. So that's a very, very good return and a good reflection on our defenders and Brad in goal.
And now the forwards are starting to click as well. So
exactly, yeah. Barry
and
Coffey
goals
scored
from different angles again.
That it's not just one player scoring all the goals. Barry got in on it on Friday. Nathan nearly got in on it. Jack got another one.
Mm.
And Evan again. So it's not just like the strikers are the only ones scoring or the forwards are the only ones scoring. Everyone's chipping in, which is good.
Another great cameo appearance from Jaden as well, with an assist this time after scoring a goal.
Do you know what? I was only thinking of watching in the game. Imagine running around, trudging around on that pitch for 70 minutes and your legs are heavy and you're wrecked. And next thing Jaden Nunez coming on and he's running at you. Like, oh, it's just insulting. Like,
and actually that side of the pitch was a bit better than the other side. So yeah, I was thinking, this is great. This is a good tactic by Tim here, because he can run out of here without getting stuck.
Yeah, and it worked, because he did the work for Evan's goal and got it into Evan. Sweet finish from Evan as well. And so that paid off. So happy days. Listen,
the crowd was good. I was worried because there was a lot of rain Friday afternoon, and God, like, it was heavy mist.
Do you know what? I was there from probably 1 or 2, and it was actually fine for most of the day. And the worst of the rain started kind of 5 or 6 around then. And that's that time when people are finishing work and, you know, making their plans. Will I go? Will I not go? And if you look out the window and you see the rain, it kind of makes your mind up for you. So for us to get, what was it, 3,619 after that, in those, all things considered, that's a great crowd.
And it wasn't anyway, that, it's there was a huge crowd from Cove or anything. Like,
exactly. Like, even at the best times, that's a great crowd in the First Division. But weather conditions taken into account, it's an incredible crowd.
And I'd say if it was dry, I'd say you could have had easily an extra 1,000 on top of that.
Yeah, you would think so, yeah.
I think you would have. Like, you know, so look.
If it was a sunny evening, yeah.
So the women weren't playing this weekend?
No game last weekend. And they're back in action this Saturday, scheduled to play DLR Waves at Turner's Cross. It's a tricky one, because obviously we were there Friday night, and anyone else that was there leaving Friday night, the pitch, I don't.
They called off another game over the weekend, didn't they, or something? Was it? There was some sort of...
There was a final, I think, West due to be on Sunday, yeah. We're recording this podcast on Monday, and no decision has been made or anything like that. As far as we know, the game is going ahead, but personally, from seeing the pitch on Friday night, I don't...
It's a lot of work there.
Yeah, I don't see how a game could be played on that for
hopefully,
probably 2 weeks, but yeah, we'll see. As of now, as
would it
we
be
said,
a case that did move it to someone else?
I don't know.
Bishopstown was probably caught up as well.
Yeah, and Danny's been clear that he doesn't want to move a game to Bishopstown. So I'll be honest, I don't know what's going to happen. But
we'll just have to.
The weather this morning again was bad, and I don't know how it is for the rest of the week. I haven't checked.
Like, the weather on Sunday wasn't too bad. Like, it was a lovely day on Sunday. If you had that for the rest of the week, you'd say, okay, this is manageable. It might dry out.
Yeah, and then this morning was similar to Friday. So, as I said. As of now, we have a game. We have a home game on Saturday to look forward to, but I don't know what's going to happen between now and then. Mm. Keep an eye on our social medias. We'll obviously keep everyone updated as to what's going on, but yeah, that's where we're at for now.
A lot of the academy games were called off over the weekend as well, weren't they?
Yeah, all the games Saturday. The games on Sunday went ahead. But
that was just kind of because of the orange warning, was it?
To be honest, it was more like the weather in Cork wasn't the issue. It was the other teams and having them travel to Cork was what the issues were. But our under-17s played away to Treaty yesterday in a dare. That was a 4:30 kickoff, and it was a 2-2 draw. Treaty actually got a 96th-minute equaliser there.
Oh, my God.
So it was also a 2-2 draw, actually, in the under-14 game. That was away to Wexford. But 96th-minute equaliser against you is never a fun way to end the game.
No matter what age level it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you any out in the boats this week? Who'd you catch up with?
We got Tim and Barry after the game on Friday night. So we had the... Barry had time for a shower, but we didn't have Tim came in sopping from the rain. But we got the two of those after the game. So Barry spoke to the media first, and this is what he had to say after that one.
Yeah, probably a long time overdue. So it felt nice to get that monkey off the back. Good performance. Conditions obviously far from ideal, but as I said, it ends a positive, I suppose, week, getting a good performance like that. So we're delighted.
Two kind of similar goals, really, goal one and goal two. Barry out wide, that's what you want from a winger, to get those kind of crosses, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I suppose this week we've worked on. We've obviously got abundance of a talent in attacking areas, so with the strengths in our wide areas and trying to get numbers in the box, it was good to kind of go with the one and the two. It probably suits me and Jacko to feed off each other, making runs into the box, and Greg behind us then. So yeah, it's something that I suppose we probably worked on all week, and I suppose we'll give the gaffer some credit to kind of exactly what we worked on paid off. So delighted.
Yeah, I think the main thing for Barry there was he was obviously disappointed a couple of weeks ago. He picked up that red card and missed a few games, so he would have wanted a goal before now, but for him to get a goal on Friday night then,
good, he's off to the mark now.
Exactly, in front of the shed as well, especially. Got that, as he said, monkey off his back now, and he got a goal on the board, and he'll be hoping for many more going forward. But just after that, we had Tim waiting in the wings, and he stepped in, and he was much more happy with that than he was with performance in Wexford on Monday, for example. But this is what he had to say.
Yeah, listen, I'm happy with the result. It's the most important thing. A quarter of the season done now. We're sitting top of the league. So pleased. Been absolutely delighted with the players from day one in pre-season.
And now we're quarter away and we're first round of fixtures done. And listen, I'm absolutely thrilled with how the players are applying themselves, how they're adapting to game situations. They've had a few disappointing moments in the season so far, but yeah, listen, I'm absolutely delighted for them.
Yeah, how tough was it out there with the conditions for the players to have?
Well, listen, it's two teams playing the same pitch, so it's irrelevant of what the conditions are. It's freaky, the weather that we've had this year, so everywhere's the same throughout the country, and it's not easy, but again, listen, the fact that the game got through it tonight, credit to the ground staff and that as well for getting the game on. And listen, it's a good result for us. We got 3 goals tonight. We kept another clean sheet, which is massive for us. And I think we probably could have not been a bit harsh here on Cove, but I think we probably could have had 2 or 3 others.
Were we at all worried when you were 2-0 up that the referee was going to blow it up?
Well, we can't control that, so it is what it is. We have to look after ourselves, and we had a good first half again. And what the pleasing thing was, Monday we had a good first half in Wexford, and we had a pretty poor second half, and we spoke about it during the week, and we wanted to see the reaction from Monday night, and we got that tonight in the second half. I thought we were very good as well. We controlled the game, and we still carried a threat as well going forward, and Evan got his goal then to make it 3-0, and that was good.
Yeah, you can hear it from Tim there. He's delighted. Yeah, quarter season through, 3 points ahead. As you said, we'll go even as well. Like only two goals conceded.
Yeah,
I think I'd say that gives them confidence now for the rest of the season. I mean, the team is still kind of only kind of getting into gears, I'd say.
That's the thing. Like you're watching us on a Friday night, and we're playing well. We're getting goals. You still feel that they're nearly not 100% gelled, and they can do more, which is encouraging, because if things are going well before that happens, then the only way is up again from where we are. But just going back to the game on Friday, because I don't want it to seem like we're avoiding it or ignoring it. There was an issue with the stream at the start. So basically we got in early, we tested everything, and everything was perfect, working fine. And it got to about 7:44 as the teams were coming out, and the internet's cross just flatlined. And it just
went.
We were completely working beforehand, and it dropped just before the game.
Probably through the rain or the wind or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But a couple of minutes in, we got it sorted. But yeah, there was tweets and stuff coming in, and because it was the first couple of minutes of the game is when the goals happened again. So very frustrating that we missed the goals. But look, we've been in touch with our internet provider. We don't know what happened. The equipment itself was fine. Everything was tested. That worked. Later on in the game, all right, there was one or two issues with as the rain went on and got worse throughout the evening, it was coming in. Rory's commentary notes were soaked. My laptop was getting soaked. It's because of where we are. The windows are open, so it kind of blows in. So, to be honest, an awful game, an awful condition to play a match in.
Awful
to stream in a match as well. But yeah, the main issue was the internet at the start. No idea why it dropped. It's been fine the first couple of games. Very frustrating for us, but we got it fixed as soon as we could, and it was fine for the rest of the game. So yeah, again, they're looking into what caused it or why it dropped, but very frustrating for us and very frustrating for everyone that watched the game. But we did get the goals up shortly after the game, so if you missed them in the stream, you at least got to see them afterwards.
You can get to see them. Yeah. And all the goals from the season so far, they're all up on it.
Everything's available, yeah. And as I said, that was the first issue with the stream this season anyway, and last season, as far as I can remember, that has been an issue on our end. So
things like this with technology, unfortunately, does happen.
Yeah, and
again,
trust me, I know it's frustrating for people watching it. It's much more frustrating for us. We're running around like maniacs in there trying to get it up and running. But yeah, just very unfortunate that it happened. It's whenever something seems to go wrong, it seems to be when there's a goal scored, which is doubly frustrating. But yeah,
we apologise for that. At the front or something as well.
We did. Yeah, we had a couple of changes on match night. So when you walk into Turner's Cross now, the first thing you're going to see is actually the new club shop location. So there's now a new hut across from the main entry turnstile where you'll see that.
Because you used to always be down to the right before when you
exactly
come in.
That club shop unit is actually now gone from Turner's Cross. That's been moved out, and there's a new food offering down there. I didn't get to try it myself, but I saw queues down there. It looked quite popular.
Baked potatoes or something.
Baked potatoes, I think it is. Yeah, now as I said, I didn't try it myself, but
they'll have to drop some in the next time, and
we can do a live food review.
We put in a good word there. Show, test the food at the Cross.
Exactly. Yeah, we can put in a good word there, and we'll have a new segment. Yeah, we can actually. You know what? We'll do a live segment from the Cross, trying out the food options. Clonakilty were back as well, actually, last Friday. They'd missed the first few games, and I saw always that popular at halftime. Massive queue there at halftime as well. That's always a popular one, as you said. But hopefully, it was a nice treat for people who kind of had been missing it the previous few games.
Well, they loved the ice cream last season. Are they still there?
They're still there. I actually got a 99 myself a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, freezing cold. I think it was raining, and I got a 99 as well. But sure, look,
leave the ice cream off in the rain.
There's no wrong time for a 99.
But look, it's part of, I suppose, going to a match as well. It's kind of the old chips and curry, or getting a burger or getting a hot dog or whatever. Like, it's part of the experience.
Exactly. It's, you don't need to just show up, sit down and watch the match. Get yourself even a cup of tea, a cup of coffee or something. Mm. Yeah, so hopefully people enjoyed that last Friday, and we'll continue to, I think the baked potato crowd, Best Spuddies, I think they were called,
Best Spuddies,
will be there for all games going forward. So,
well, I'd say people enjoyed that more than I'd say our next guest did with washing afterwards. Like, I can only imagine the dirt.
I'm dreading what he's going to say.
Controversial figure at the club.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think we better bring in Mick Green, the kit man at the club. He's been the kit man now for about, what, 11 or 12 years?
He's been around a while, yeah. He won't appreciate that, me making him sound like an old man now. But
I'm sure he'll have plenty of stories for us to tell.
He will. I'll go hide in the corner here now before he starts giving out about the jerseys, and we'll get Mick in.
Especially a white one. Yeah. Anyway, we better bring him in. Welcome to the podcast, Mick.
Thanks, Stephen. I think when people go on podcasts, they kind of say, thanks for having me. But I reckon you should be thanking me. I said, you must be badly stuck here asking me, like. Or that's my wife reckons anyway.
Listen, it's a coincidence because we had planned to bring you in for a few weeks, and it just happens that we pick you at a right time where you've had a lot of work to do over the weekend.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It must have been the muckiest ever, was it?
It was the worst ever, yeah. And, like, the kit being white really didn't help. Like, you know, if it was any bit darker, it'd be fine. But white is just, yeah. It was tough.
I saw the transformation you did from Jack's kit from literally looked brown to white again.
It was brown, and the socks are black somehow. Yeah, they're all grander. They're after coming out the other side of it, so.
Yeah, what's the secret? Like, what are you using? Is it Daz or Postle?
There was actually, probably for one of the first times ever, was a lot of elbow grease on Friday night. But I was there till after midnight Friday. I hand washed everything first, like, and soaked it.
And why are you doing that then?
Why?
Where?
Well, in Bishopstone, the training ground.
Oh, did you take her back out to Bishopstone?
Yeah. I got,
straight
after. Straight after, yeah. I won't bore you too much. Like, the thing with when white kit particularly gets stained, like, if the stain's dry in, you're done, like. Mm. So you need to get it washed fairly quickly. But it's all ready to go for Friday again. All white. My brother lives out in Portugal, like, and he's no interest in football. But even he was like, what's the story of that white kit? How did that happen? And he says, can you not just throw it out and get more? And I was like, do you know what? I could, but I'm so stubborn. I wanted to get it out myself. Like, just pure, belligerent. Like,
has to, Listen, I suppose that's part of the game as well. Like, you know.
It is a bit, It is a bit, yeah. They have to have it right, like, so.
So take me back, Mick. What was your first involvement with the club?
I suppose I don't remember a time in my life where Cork City wasn't a huge part of it.
Always a supporter.
Always, since, like, I was born in 83, club was formed in 84, and I was always there. I suppose it probably goes back to, there used to be a Garda station in Shandon Street, and my dad was stationed there.
Okay.
And at the time he'd been involved with, like, representative schoolboy sides and stuff like that. And he was in the Garda station in Shandon Street one day, and Chris Hurley and Jim Hennebreen, both now deceased, came into him, and they knew him and asked him to get involved in this new League of Ireland club that was being formed in Cork. So it kind of went from there. He was involved from the early days. Subsequently, I was always there as well.
So you were dragged along even as a sport?
Dragged along, yeah. So as I say, I don't remember a time where there wasn't Cork City in my life, you know.
But it was very different in the 80s.
Well, like, presumably, I don't remember it.
What's your earliest memory?
I would have to say it's the early 90s. Yeah. Could be the late 80s. Do you know what? Because it's always been there, it's a bit of a blur. Mm. I don't remember my first Cork City game. It's not like I was...
I'm a bit the same myself.
You know, I wasn't brought to my first Cork City game at 8 years of age. I remember, like, the first time I went to Anfield. Mm. I don't remember my first time at Turner's Cross because there's just, you know...
It always seemed to happen.
It was just there, like, yeah, you know, yeah.
But I'm guessing when you went, it was probably just the shed and three embankments.
That's what it was, yeah. Yeah.
Because I remember standing up in some grass mount where the Donny Ford is known.
Yeah, there was a bit of a mound, like the St. Anne's end was just grass, and so was the Derrynane Road side. Like, there's the transformation in that stadium in the last, you know, 30 years has been incredible. I saw a picture online recently, it was a contrast between now and then.
Mm.
And only for the houses, actually, a couple of houses on the Derrynane Road, you wouldn't know it's the same stadium. Like,
no.
You know, the work that has been done.
Totally different.
That stadium is incredible, like.
It kind of looks, I suppose, back then, it was more like what you see in Munster Senior League, no? Even AUL, maybe. Like,
yeah, probably is. And do you know what? No disrespect to some of those grounds, because there's some Munster Senior League grounds out there. Absolutely fabulous. Like, we're close to Lakewood here. Fabulous setup. Mm. Blarney United, who I played. Fabulous setup. Like, you know, there's the junior clubs around Cork have fantastic facilities.
So as you got older, I'd imagine you started kind of going into the shed and stuff like that as a teenager. And
do you know what?
Like,
I never actually, people say you're in the shed. Someone was on to me, Fenner's, Anthony Fenley was on to me recently about, I can't remember, he was, oh, that was you a few years ago. And I said, I actually never went into the shed that much. Mm. I used to actually stand on the very front of it by the wall there.
Mm.
I was never actually in the middle of it too much, but yeah, I would have spent, I used to kind of watch matches. I used to go from either, depend which end we're playing into, you know, kind
move
of
move around,
yeah, 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 move you around, see, like, yeah.
Some people still do that.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah, they do. Yeah, you'd notice that. Mm. You'd notice that, especially in the second half, there'd be a bigger crowd in St Anne's End or something.
Especially if they're playing into the shed in the first half, you'd obviously see a crowd moving.
You would. St Anne's End would be way more packed the second half or something like. So yeah, that's kind of what I did. Yeah, moved around.
And was it, I suppose, when the whole Forest thing kind of started, when you really got involved in the club, or were you kind
No, 100%, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, up until that, I had my season ticket, home, all home matches. Some away matches wouldn't have made, you know, obviously work, school and all that at that time. Yeah, it would have been under the Forest thing that I'd probably really, really got involved. And I suppose that first season in 2010, you know, I think back to 2008, 2009, we used to have those Forest meetings inside the telecom club, inside in Prez, when no one knew what was going on. And, yeah, it was kind of in 2010 when Forest, I suppose, at the drop of a hat, had to take over the running of the thing, that everyone kind of put the shoulder to the wheel and got involved and helped any way they could. Like
some people might be too young to remember, even, like, to, you know, I know we have a lot of young listeners, but back then, like, the club literally was gone.
It was gone. Like, I remember distinctly going to Derry in July 2009, and there was, the High Court was on the next day. I remember driving back from Dublin, and Rory O'Hagan came on Red FM saying Cork City was wound up, was gone, was effective, was to be wound up. And that's, yeah, that's nearly 15 years ago, so a lot of people won't remember that.
So was there a couple of you at that time, or, like, in terms of, was there, like, a bigger committee in Forest kind of
I wasn't actively involved in Forest that time. I was a Forest member that time, but I didn't get actively involved in Forest. Like, I gave a dig out with things in 2010 and 2011. But I wasn't
more volunteer capacity kind
of thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I didn't get elected onto the board of Forest until 2012, just after we'd won the first division.
Yeah, so it was the initial group. They got us up into the Premier Division.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, as you said, a lot of people won't remember that time, but, like, there's so many people there. You know, you think back to, I remember being in those meetings, like, said, John O'Sullivan, Kevin McCarthy, Sonny O'Neill, Pat Shine, God rest him, Paul Hart, these people, I hope, I'm probably leaving someone out now, Kevin Lynch. The club owe them such a debt of gratitude, and a lot of supporters don't know it, because with the passage of time, and, you know.
Yeah. But they put an awful lot of effort in.
Huge amount. Johnson O'Brien, another one. Huge amount of time and effort. And I'd say, like, I know from being on the board the toll it could take on you, like, mentally and all the rest. So.
And all of them were working full time in different capacities.
I mean, you'd hear the stories afterwards that they were leaving work, going into meetings. They were there all night. They were, you know. Mm. Yeah, so, like, to keep the club going the way they did was phenomenal. And, you know, what was it, 13 days before the season started?
That's right. I remember going was it Crosshaven they played?
I better not leave out Sean O'Connell, because he will kill me if I don't mention him.
Well, that's important. If there's key members of that initial Forest board, they have to be mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. We owed them a huge debt of gratitude.
Yeah. Like, because I think it was Crosshaven away or something like that, and there was a lot of fans turned up.
Crosshaven, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
And it really felt this was a community making sure that the club didn't fall.
Yeah, I remember Kevin Mullen going around doing a bucket collection.
That's right.
And we didn't even have a kit that time. I remember, I think Adrian Ryan gave the club a loan of an old Hummel black kit. I saw that picture somewhere recently. But you know what? They put it together. Like,
put it together. And what was it, a year or two maybe? Did it come up in the first season or second season?
No, second season. Finished sixth in 2010 and won the first division in that 94th minute in 2011. That's right, yeah. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So then, like, that board then obviously did its term, is it? And how did you
did
people walk away from it?
Some people stepped down, some people stayed on. So there was continuity. So when I went onto the board in 2012 with the late great John Kennedy, Eric Anihuma and Colin Power, we were the four that stepped onto the board in 2012. But you had great continuity there, because the likes of Paul Harton was still there, the likes of Jonathan O'Brien was still there. Would say Sonia had stepped down. Sonny O'Neill had stepped down, and we'll say John O'Sullivan had stepped down. I can't quite remember who else now had stepped down that time. So it wasn't a complete clear out, which was very important, because you had to have some continuity and know what had went on previously. So yeah, that was the start of 2012.
And did you put yourself forward for chairperson then?
I did, for some god unknown reason. To this day, I still don't know why. Yeah, no, I did. So I suppose what happened was after the AGM, Jonathan O'Brien had he had stepped in as the interim chairman after John O'Sullivan had stepped down at the end of 2011. But after every AGM, the chair, all the officers, the chair, vice chair, secretary, treasurer, have to be re-elected. So he was re-elected the chairman that time after. But to be fair to Jonathan, I think he had just the year previous been elected to the Dáil.
That's right, yeah.
So like that in itself, I can imagine, is stressful and taxing. And I know he was up and down to Dublin a lot. Obviously, like being on the board of Cork City is very, very stressful and time consuming.
Mm.
And I'd say that just the work-life balance for him probably wasn't working, and he stepped away in April 2012. So yeah, there was a bit of a void. Paul Harton was the vice chairman. Kind of thought he might take up the role, but yeah, no, he didn't. And he kind of asked me, would I? And then I had a very interesting call from John O'Sullivan, who was chairman the year before, and who I had so much time and still hold him in huge regard, kind of encouraging me to maybe, you know, put myself forward for the chair. And John Kennedy was interested in it too. And I spoke to John at length, and John said, I'm pulling my name. He says, I want you to put your name forward for it. So yeah, that's kind of, I was 2 months onto the board, and next thing, all of a sudden, I was the chairman of the club. I was 28 years of age. I was like, oh Christ.
Youngest ever, was it?
I assume so. But what people don't, sometimes they'd be on about, what people don't understand, you're not an executive chairman.
No.
You're not an executive. You know, we go back to the likes of the great eras under Brian Lennox, who owned the club. He was the executive chairman. It was
his decision.
It was his decision. Whereas I had no more power than anyone else on the board, apart from if there was, like, okay, you'd have the casting vote if there was a decision to be made, which I never had to use. But you weren't. So, well, there was pressure and all the rest, but it was shared amongst the board. And that time you had a very good staff in Timmy Murphy, who was the chief executive. That's, he wasn't right, long in, but he was excellent. Dana Buckley, who was years of experience in football administration. So the two of them are, you know, and Aina's still there running the show to this day, are absolutely excellent.
Aina will never go, it's a...
What's that?
Aina will never go, it's
a... No, you're like an old bad smell. Sorry, Aina. No, hopefully not, because you know what? People come and go from football clubs, and he's one of the, yeah, he's one of the few who has just been consistently there.
So 2012, they kind of come up into the Premier Division. They were kind of finding their feet still at this stage.
Finding their feet, and like all things considered, had, you know, finished mid-table, actually qualified for the Setanta Cup, if you remember.
That's right.
I think finished fifth or sixth. Had a good season. In fairness, no, you couldn't have, like, your first season up, what do you want, like, if you would give, like, what did we want last year when we went back up to the Premier Division? We wanted to stay up, and that would have been a success. So 2012 was a very good season in terms of where you finished in the table, you know.
But the fans kind of got bored with the style of football maybe or something, or there was definitely rumblings around Tommy at the time, wasn't there? There was,
and probably in 2012, probably I thought unfairly, because while results were mixed, we were still getting good results. We finished mid-table, you know, but there was rumblings. The crowds did drop off. Like, I mean, it's remarkable, because we were a mid-table Premier Division team, and certainly in 2013, we were getting crowds there of like 1,500.
That's right, I remember. Yeah.
I don't know, like, last year, did we ever dip below 2,000?
I don't think so. Not that I remember.
Even in the first division in 2022, I don't think we ever dipped below 2,000. You know, so the crowds really did dip in 2012 and 2013. And I remember, like...
I suppose the depths of recession maybe as well.
There was a bit of that,
possibly,
to be fair.
A knock-on impact, you know.
There very possibly was, but I remember there being games there, Stephen, like, and being inside in the boardroom. And that time... I suppose it was really only cards and tapping and all that when it came in COVID. So that time it was cash. Everything was cash. No one used, there was no card machine, even the ticket hut. So it was all cash. And I remember counting cash in the cash room, ticket sales. I can remember there wasn't enough money after being brought in to get paid the wages the following week. Well, like, oh, for fuck's sake, again.
Yeah, we go again.
But, and Timmy Murphy has to take a lot of credit here, every week, and 2012 and 2013, the club made losses, but every single week, the wages were paid on time, you know. And given what the club had experienced a few years previously, and like, you think that's a given, or you pay the wages, of course you do, but the way League of Ireland football was, you frequently hear of these bad news stories where wages aren't paid. So
constantly,
the way, you know, in fairness to Timmy, he found a way to pay the wages every single week,
because he obviously had a budget at the start of that season, and you know, you were looking for so many people to come through the gates, because that's at the end of the day, that's where all the money comes
from. That's where the
sponsorship is a portion, obviously.
It's a big portion of it, but like, yeah, you're you know,
and bread and butter. Like,
to be honest with you, like, and I remember when I came onto the board that time. So the budget, so the financial year that time actually started very strangely at the start of December.
Mm.
So basically the financial year was December 2011 to the end of November 2012.
Okay.
So by the time I came on the board, that budget was done. And I remember looking at it in a few financial meetings and thinking, fuck me, I'm not sure this is, you know.
Mm.
And the budget for 2013, which I did sign off on, it didn't go that well because results didn't go that well and gates did drop away off.
And it was full-time football, wasn't
it? And it was full-time football. Mm. And I remember by the end of 2013, myself and Timmy Murphy talking about it, saying, is this sustainable?
Mm.
Is full-time football sustainable? Because we lost six figures at the end of 2013. And John Coughlin went into 2014 with not a big budget. Like, he overachieved. So people never understand how much he overachieved in that season. He went into that with a minuscule budget.
Amazing. Like,
yeah, because we were really trying to balance the books. And that year, like, only for that year being so successful on the pitch, which brought the books way up and probably wiped out the debts of the previous year.
Crowds flock back when you're successful too, don't they?
Massively, massively. I remember once saying, we were talking about how to get more crowds in, and we're bringing in a club promotion officer. And I remember Stephen O'Callaghan, who was on the board at the time, saying, he says, there's one thing that'll bring crowds in the gate, he says, and it's results.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. Nothing else would bring in crowds like results.
Same, yeah.
Simple as that. Simple as that.
So obviously then, like, you're there then and you're seeing the success. Are you kind of saying, oh, we can take a risk now and start investing more? Or how does that work then?
Oh, yeah. Like, after everything the club have been through, do you really want to speculate, to accumulate that much? You really need to be careful, like, you know.
And is that a danger with a fan-owned club as well at times, in that you can kind of get carried away with success as well?
You probably can, because obviously supporters are more emotional than you know, so someone might just come in cold investing or something. But yeah, you need to try just keep the head and stay balanced, which I think we did, because obviously 2014 was a huge success, and 2015, you know, the books were quite good as well.
There was a cup final and everything.
There was. Now, I was gone off the board by 2015. But I had signed off on the budget for that year, the previous year. But so the years that followed were.
But John really started building his team then around that 2015. Started bringing in good players.
Massively, and then if you need to remember too that at the end of 2015 he had some huge choices to make, because I suppose that was our second year in a row being runner up to Dundalk. We lost the cup final to them. He moved on a lot of players that year and really rebuilt at the end of 2015.
Mm.
You know, he had a lot of decisions to make, and you know, you can't. Well, it's grand having loyalty and all the rest, but like, there was a lot of players were moved on at the end of 2015. Great servants to the club, like, plus football. There's no room for sentiment. Like, he made some tough choices, but like, he brought in some fantastic players for 2016 was probably my favorite year of all.
Of all.
Yeah, of all, definitely.
So what, you had 2 years or 3 years of being chairperson?
Two. So yeah, I was the chairman basically more or less for 2012 and 2013.
And 2013.
2013 was particularly tough. That was year, like, obviously we moved on Tommy Dunn, which was horrific.
And did you have to
No, I didn't make the decision, because, as I say, I wasn't an executive chairman.
Mm.
So it was a board decision.
And who informs him then?
Me.
What's that like?
That was awful. It was awful.
Like, bring him to the office, meet him for a coffee somewhere?
Yeah, met him. We played up in Thomond Park. Remember Limerick played in Thomond Park in 2013?
That's right, yeah.
And we met, the decision had been made, and we met him that night when he came back. And on reflection, it mightn't have been the best thing to do, because the bus got back to Bishopstown. And I was there.
Mm.
John Kennedy was there. The players copped we were there. The lights are on the place, you know, 12 o'clock at night. They probably knew what was they probably knew what was going on. So we brought him into the office and just went through it with him. Very, very tough. And that,
because his family had moved to Cork and everything. They had to settle down.
Tommy, he had bought a house here and everything.
That's right.
And actually I had helped him. I remember I had helped him collect tiles for the house a couple of months previous. And you know, so I was... We were friendly, not to the point where it compromised our professional relationship, but I was friendly, would have been, you know what I mean, working relationship with him. But the board made a decision, and I remember being asked at the time why, and the decision that any board, you know, you can always stand over the decision if you say it was what we felt was in the best interests of Cork City, and that was the decision the board made at the time. And look, at that,
did you make the decision on the day, or was it
no? It was the previous board meeting. Sometime
that if a result goes against us, then we inform them, or how does that?
No, work? I did the result. I don't think the result was. The result wasn't going like you can't be that flippy floppy that you can do it on one result. This is probably building a while now, without telling you how people voted. Not everyone, like I didn't think it was the right time.
Okay.
No, look, subsequently with the success we had afterwards, maybe I was wrong, and that's, you know. But the decision was made. I was the chairman of the board, and I had to carry out the board's wishes, and that was, you know what I mean?
And I suppose with so many people on the board, you kind of can't wait around too long either, because rumours get out there, somebody slips a comment somewhere. But
very easily, and there was always, like, you get that in football, you get leaks here and there, and it's very, very frustrating, but yeah, you can't, you're right, you can't leave, because people will know. And I remember, like, that night, I remember Tommy left Bishop's on, Timmy Murphy arrived out. We had to ring in a Buckley to do press releases for the next day, and it was on the way home. He had to come back and meet us. And we had Stuart Ashton lined up to take over. And Stuart, to be fair, was very, very kind of loyal, decent kind of a man. Stuart wouldn't talk about any, like, it had been mooted to him in the days running up to it by someone else on the board, and he wouldn't discuss it because he was like, no, that's someone else's job. I'm not talking about someone else's job. But someone had went to him, and we had someone on the board lined up to go to him, Alan Mooney, went to him and said, look, Stuart, this is happening tonight. We need to know if you'll take it. So Stuart said, look, I will. So he said he'd take it. So we said, look, we'll be in touch tonight. So we started drafting the press releases and all the rest. And next thing, we said, we better ring Stuart. We need to talk to him just to box off a few things. Do you think we could get on to Stuart? Stuart wasn't answering his phone.
Oh, God.
This was a Friday night around 12:30. Couldn't get on to him. He's like, where does he live? So Alan Mooney had an idea where he lived. So we went looking anyway. We eventually found his house, and because I knew the car, he had the same car as me. I said, that's his car to me. So we were outside Stuart Ashton's house, right, at 1:30 in the morning.
On a Friday night.
And Timmy's about to, I said, Timmy, stop a second. I says, it's 1:30 in the morning. Is this really the best idea? I says, we'll get him early in the morning. I said, we'll ring him at 7:00 in the morning.
Mm.
So the Saturday morning, we met him early inside the River Lee Hotel, as it is now. And he agreed to take the job for the rest of the season. And we met the players in the Marduk later on. And
sure, Stuart had been involved for years.
Sure, Stuart had been
underage and all that,
like,
kind of stuff.
Stuart was the under-19 manager. He had won the double with the 19s. He had won the double with the 19s the year before, himself and Paul Bowden. Mm. Fantastic. They were a fantastic team between them. They had won everything the underage game had to offer. They had brought so many players through. Mm. I suppose it wasn't an academy that time. It was just one underage team.
That's right.
You know, fantastic what he had achieved. The players that he nurtured, I suppose. Just, yeah.
So that was the toughest time under being chairperson.
Yeah, it was. Because, like, geez, at the end of the day, like, no one wants to be firing anyone, you know. No. And I never describe it as that. I always say, look, club, we parted ways.
Mm.
But yeah, it was.
But it was kind of the business of football as well.
It's the business of football, yeah. And you have to get on with it, like, you know. Mm. You have to get on with it. And you need to put, I suppose you need to put emotion to one side, really, you know.
But even that whole period, that must have been a great period for your family as well, kind of seeing that, you know, your dad was involved in the early days of the club, and now 30 years on, kind of.
I suppose it was probably the first second generation board member as such, like, you know. I suppose it was. I never really thought of it that way.
Nice legacy thing for the club.
It probably is, yeah. No, if my young fella tries to get involved at board level, I'll listen to this. You're on the don't.
Stay away from it.
Don't, as your hair will start to fall out and everything, like. But.
So your time finishes as chairperson. What happens next? How did you end up as kit man?
So just strange, just coincidence. So we were up in, it was the end of 2013. We were up playing a league match up in Drogheda. I was still the chairman at this stage, but I was fairly worn from it now at this stage. I was tired, and I think it was Drogheda or Shells. I can't remember. It was one of the two of them. I was fairly worn from it now at this stage. Mm. And we went to the ground, and Jerry Harris, late great Jerry Harris, who just, the man I have so much time for. He was taking gear off the bus, and I said, geez, I said, Jerry, do you want a hand there, you know? And they said, I take a hand, yeah. So I was lifting one of the aluminium skips, and I went, Jerry, these things are savage heavy. And he says, there's a bit of weight in them, right, there's a bit of weight in them. And I was like, it was kind of bothering me that Jerry, at that stage, like, now Jerry is fantastic. Like, the lads used to be doing pre-season training out in the Marduk, and Jerry used to be doing laps of the pitch.
He
used to be out around the running track with the lads in his 70s. So Jerry, like, So physically, it didn't bother him, but I felt really kind of bad that, geez, like, man shouldn't have to be hauling this stuff around at this stage of his life. So I knew I was kind of stepping away from the board. I said, Jerry, look, I said, if you want to handle that stuff next year, I says, I'm kind of stepping away. Like, I wasn't stepping off the board, but I was stepping down his chair. I says, I'll give you a hand, like, you know.
Mm.
So he seemed quite happy to. Look, Jerry and myself got on fierce well for one reason. We're both very, very particular.
Okay.
Like, loads of guys had come in previous years trying to help Jerry, but they weren't as particular as Jerry was, and it didn't last. Work. But I was as particular as him, so we got on so well together. And I think when he saw how particular I was, he kind of left me do it more and more. And he kind of just went from there, just kind of...
Just help him out?
I kind of helped him out, but yeah, I kind of very quickly kind of... It just happened, took ownership of it. Mm. Just, he was happy to let me belt away, and I just kind of got stuck in.
Kind of like passing the baton on to you.
Yeah,
meaning.
I think he came in one day, and I was after rearranging the kit room, and he went, Jesus, this place looks great. Yeah. I was like, I think he's after.
Job.
I says, I think he's after accepting me. Yeah, yeah. And it just went from there. And I didn't think 11 years on I'd still be doing it, but here I am.
So, like, you've witnessed a lot then in that period of time, like, in, you good, know, ups good, and downs.
Ups and downs, huge ups and massive downs. But you know what, as life goes on and things come into perspective, like when I was young, if Cork City lost the game, I'd be furious.
Mm.
I'd be upset. But as life goes on and you get older, everything, you know, comes into perspective. And if you lose, no, you're okay, you're still a bit disappointed, but... But life goes on. There's more.
You've already witnessed them bouncing back a few times.
I have, and circles. Football comes around in circles, and I mean, I look at Dundalk at the moment, like, and I see Stephen O'Donnell's after we left goal this morning. Like, a couple of years ago, it was us and Dundalk ruling the league, and now we're, you know, they're in a very bad place. Now hopefully we're on the way back up, but you know, it just comes around in circles, doesn't it?
Always, yeah.
Like, I was listening to an LOI podcast yesterday. I think was it Barry Murphy or someone was on it. Or Brian Murphy, one of those goalkeepers, and he was on about the time we went up to Tala and beat them 5-0 in the cup.
Mm.
You know, and that's, I think that was 2015. So, and Rovers on their knees that time. There was banners for Bradley out and all that. They wanted him out. Like, it was, I can't remember. Maybe it wasn't Stephen Bradley that time.
Might have been
Pat Finlan. But anyway, they wanted Stephen Bradley out of Shamrock Rovers, and now look at the success he's had since. So,
football is a funny business. Like.
Very funny, but it comes around in circles, doesn't it? You know.
But like when you went in there, like, I mean. God, you got to witness, what, 4 cup finals in a row?
4 cup finals in a row, yeah. 15 to 18, yeah.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah, 1-16-7. It was incredible. I remember being there in 2015, setting up the dressing room, this massive dressing room, all the bells and whistles. And I remember looking around and saying, will I ever be in here again?
Mm.
And I never did I think I was going to be in there 4 years in a row. Incredible. God, I'd love a trip back there now. Like.
Yeah, you kind of take it for granted, then, I'd say, after a while. Second or third time.
Probably the fourth year, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, here we go again. You know, it became used to it, like, which, yeah, God, I'd love to go back there.
It was kind of strange that the two teams kept playing each other in the final every year.
It was, yeah. Yeah, it probably, I think everyone was, I won't say everyone was sick of it towards the end, but generally, I think the rest of the league were probably sick of it, you know, probably wanted a shake-up in it, like, you know.
And like from those times, like, what are the standout moments then? Do you remember from the, like, are you in there then when the likes of John or, you know, Tim nowadays, or are you there when they're giving their team talks?
You're kind of
sitting in the background, kind of.
Yeah, laughing sometimes, depending. I'm there the whole time, because someone's always going to be looking for something. But my role is, like, you know, it's very important when you're addressing to know your role.
Mm.
My role is to be seen and not heard. I don't have to say anything. I don't need to say anything, you know.
Mm.
Just know your place. Like, I've seen people coming down the years with notions about themselves, and you're like, shut up, that's not your job. Like, so I understand the background of a fella needs something. That's what I'm there for. It's important the players are going out, like, to give them. My job is to give them everything they need to perform at a certain level, you know. And the same for the coaches, give them everything they need to perform at a certain level, and that's. So yeah, I'm just in there. Listen, I'd be flicking through the programme. I won't be, you know.
Have you ever witnessed kind of like where they come in at half time, it's a disaster of a first half, and whatever is said, you just know from the buzz in the dressing room that things are going to change.
Yes,
have you seen any moments like that over the years?
I have seen certain players respond differently to other players.
Okay.
Like certain players will respond like, and a good manager will know how to get the best out of you and the best out of me in two hugely different approaches, you know, that kind of way.
You might have to show that one and kind of give the other a whole kind of thing.
Some fellas need an arm around the shoulder, you'll see it, whereas other fellas need a good fucking, and every fella's different, and that's life, that's personalities. I think any good manager I ever saw was able to get the best out of every fella that was in there, like, you know?
And who were the big characters in the dressing room over the years?
If I don't mention him and I miss him dearly from the dressing room, is Mark McNulty.
Yeah,
great, like, great character, great laugh, but massive presence about him too.
Mm.
And, you know, people had a lot of respect for him because of, I suppose, what he'd achieved.
Been there so long as well.
There so long. The likes of Alan Bennett, huge, huge presence. Benno didn't have to say anything. It was just him being there, just his presence. Mm. You know, Dan Murray, you know, these guys just...
Leaders.
Leaders, and had achieved so much in the game.
Possibly great for the younger players coming through when you see people like that in the dressing room who've been there, done that, bought the T-shirt kind of thing.
It has to be. It has to be. Even now, when you look at the likes of having Greg back, Greg Bulger, like, how good is it for young players to work alongside someone like him?
Mm.
You know, how good is it? You know, even I remember players come in like, and you know, and sometimes if a player came in for the first time up from the 19s, I might put him next to one of the... I won't put all the kids together because they might be a bit giddy and stuff.
Mm.
I remember a few times kids come in and I put him next to Colin Healy. I put him next to Johnny Dunleavy and say, can we just talk? You know, like imagine coming in for the first time and sitting next to a Colin Healy in the dressing room or a Greg Bulger. Fantastic. Just incredible experiences.
So you in control of who sits where?
Yes. I hold all the power. I used to like the lads. I said, lads, if you're not being nice to me, you know, so I won't put you on the team sheet because I fill out the team sheet too. So
you set up before they go in.
Yeah. It's set up well before they arrive.
Take me through it. Obviously, you have to prepare before the match. Somehow get is all the gear in Bishopstown. Then you have to go and get it and bring it to Torres Cross.
Essentially, it's in Bishopstown at the moment. It's actually I finished there yesterday evening. It's everything's ready for Friday, so I'll throw it into the van tomorrow, pack it up tomorrow. I like to arrive maybe a couple of hours before the players and set up. It's probably an hour. It's actually probably about an hour in setting up properly.
And are you doing it by yourself or have you help?
Mainly by myself. My young fella was going to matches with me there for a while, but I think Fortnite has taken over his interests.
He's fed up of it.
Yeah, he's fed up of it. For now anyway.
They go through phases.
Yeah, I think all the losing last year, I said, he came in 2022 with me, and we were winning hand over fist, scoring loads of goals. In 2023, we couldn't win an argument, and he was,
And have you one or two kits for everybody? How does that
one.
Work? Just one.
One, and it's
there's no, what happens if a jersey rips or something?
During a match,
what
you have is you have to have a shirt called a blood sub shirt.
Okay.
So actually, Cathal O'Sullivan had to wear one recently.
I remember it. Yeah.
So you have to have a shirt with just the number, no name in it. That if because you're not allowed blood on your shirt,
okay.
So if someone comes in at half time with blood or whatever, you have to give them the spare shirt.
Hmm.
But obviously, if someone's shirt rips, I just replace it during the week. It's not a big deal. But yeah, ideally, everyone should have two shirts, and we did for a long time. Then I suppose we had a bit of turmoil in 2019 in terms of budgets and stuff. So all the budgets were cut way back for 2020. So every fellow was back to having one shirt.
You got used to it then.
Yeah, kind of got used to it. Yeah, I would like to go back to the stage where, of course, every fellow should have two shirts because some fellas used to like to change at halftime and stuff. But we'll get there.
And of course, the away kit and the third kit hardly get used, really, do they?
Not, funny enough, would you believe I actually wanted to use the away kit on Friday night?
Oh, yeah?
Because I could see the boys were soaked. I went down to the Fort Official. I said, do you mind if we change to our away kit at halftime? Because I had it in the van, and we haven't worn it yet. And he says, yeah, I'll talk to the ref, but it shouldn't be a problem. So I said, of course, it's quite dark. So I found Ken Hennessy, the Cove kit, and I said, Ken, do you have your away kit with you? No, that's the end of that song. But I would have worn it. Has that happened before? Well, yeah.
Where a team changed to a different kit?
Yeah, we've done it a few times, eh?
Have you?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I remember doing it a few times.
There's no rule against it or anything?
No, once there's no clashes, there's no issue. Ultimately, it's up to the referee, but. There's no issue with it. Once there's no.
Yeah, because that would be an interesting one. I don't think I've ever observed it myself.
There's definitely been occasions we've worn our home kit, our away kit at home. Yeah, even either changed at halftime or I remember definitely doing it in 2014. I'd say we were green, white, green and we came out in the second half in white, green, white. I'd say it might have been Bowes at home or Shamrock Rovers. I can't remember. Was it Rovers? I think it might have been. I think that was...
That gold kit, wasn't it?
They had that goal kit. I think we won 3-0. Yeah. And do you know what? That was one of those games of 2014 where I went, do you know what? Do you remember 2014? We started really well under John and everyone was flash in the pan. Cork City won't last. One of my favourite games of all time, and people probably won't remember this, we were up in Talla in 2014, our first trip to Talla in 2014, and we beat them 2-0. And that was the night I went to myself, no, this team's going to challenge.
Mm.
That was, I remember the dressing room that night. It was an incredible atmosphere. Because we went to Talla, Shamrock Rovers were meant to dominate the league for years after the Europa League in 2011 and all this nonsense. And we went up and we stuffed them that night up there. And I went, this team has something. We're going to go all the way. Actually, we were within half an hour winning the league that year, up in Oriel Park.
Crazy.
Yeah.
What did it feel like in the dressing room, like when you went down after the success, like take the first relegation a few years back, like after winning the double, being in four cup finals in a row, like what was that like?
Do you know what? So the night we got relegated in 2020, we were up in Sligo and we lost. Remember, Kid Elliott missed a penalty early on. I was like, oh God, this is going to be a long night. But Finn Harps were due to play later that night in Dalymount. So I was driving down the van. Erica was with me. And we had LOI TV commentary playing through the speakers in the van. I think Harps won 2-0. I remember that. And we were officially relegated that night. So I wasn't. I actually wasn't in the dressing room when we were relegated that night because Harps played later on.
Sorry, forgot about that. Yeah.
But what really stuck, that it was the following season, our first game away at Cabinteely. We drew 1-1. And it was just the gulf between the professionalism of the Premier Division to the First Division. I remember Cabinteely, like, they hadn't the team sheet filled in properly. They hadn't the right squad numbers on the team sheet, and all that stuff really annoyed me. And I remember we drew 1-1, and I sat back into the van afterwards, and I'm like, I had sat back into that van after winning the double, and like, you know, and I sat back in the same van after drawing 1-1 away to Cabinteely. I was like, what am I doing this? What are we doing in the First Division? Like, it really fucking annoyed me. Like, here we are back in the First Division again. But
yeah, but it's such a drop. Like, you go from, you know, putting the kits out inside in the Aviva
and like in the Aviva on private charter jets to European trips, like, to
I forgot about all that actually. Obviously that's the challenge itself, getting all the kits across Europe as well.
It is. I can't bring my skips. Everything has to be bagged up. But that's fine.
You can't bring your van with you, like, if you're gone.
No, I did actually one European trip. I did, yeah.
Where? Which one?
Linfield.
Yeah? Oh, I love that.
The fucking van, it broke down on the way home. Oh, the van broke down the way home from Linfield. I had a small van that year. It was a little fucking Peugeot partner.
Like, you didn't bring it to Belgium or something, go across in the ferry or something like that.
Well, do you remember, I shouldn't tell the story, but I'm going to. Do you remember we were drawn to, Levadia Tallinn?
Yeah.
In Estonia. I remember John Kennedy, God rest him, he came to me and says, "You're not going to believe this." I says, "What, John?" He says, "Someone has asked me if I'm organising a bus to Estonia." Jesus Christ, I says, "You better leave now." So, and he was like, poor John was like, he kind of didn't want to offend the person, but at the same time, you know, didn't know. I was like, probably leave that one off, John, to be honest. I says, fair play to you for organising the buses, but you only want to leave that one off.
Bit,
like,
of a trek, no, to be fair.
Bit of a trek, yeah. I laughed at that one with him, yeah. Yeah.
But great times going across Europe.
Absolutely,
like,
incredible. Like, particularly that run in 2016 was just was just phenomenal. Was that, we started in Linfield that year. Linfield, and we were eventually knocked out by the fantastic Genk side.
They were a good team.
They were, like, you look where those players, like, went on to
in the Premier League.
They did, yeah. I was only listening to the podcast. Am I allowed to mention other podcasts on this? Like, you know,
can't.
I think it was the Extra Time one, wasn't it? Stephen Beattie did the interview a few weeks ago. Did you hear that? Did you listen to that one? No. But he was on about that Genk side, like Leon Bailey, Wilfred Ndidi, all these guys.
Trossard and stuff.
Trossard? Yeah. Trossard, yeah. I saw he's at Arsenal.
Young players,
he's at Arsenal now. He scored a hat-trick for Brighton against Liverpool.
That's right.
Anfield, I was at that game. Brilliant. Fucking 3-3. Yeah, they had an incredible side, that Genk side that time. Yeah, Trossard came on against us at Turner's Cross, I think. Didn't he?
Yeah.
But that summer of 2016 was just knocking out Hacken. Hacken was just incredible. I injured myself in that Hacking game, you know. I tore my patella tendon in my knee.
Running onto the pitch or something?
Running down the side. I remember I'd been back to the dressing room to do something. I was walking back down the sideline. Next thing, Kevin O'Connor scored. And I ran down the sideline. I was running down to Cots, running, celebrating. And I said, fucking knee. Tore my patella tendon. Gobshite, like.
But even the Champions League, when Warsaw came that time,
yeah,
it was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Oh, it was fabulous.
Like,
fabulous.
I mean, even to see the number of fans, because obviously the Polish community in Cork was huge. It was
massive, yeah.
And
massive,
they all came down the streets to singing the songs. Oh,
it was massive. That was definitely, like, I remember, like, just the atmosphere in Turner's Cross. Oh, sorry. I remember the atmosphere in Turner's Cross that day was just incredible.
Yeah, brilliant.
And, like, I've never said it to him, but, like, Barry McNamee's miss that day still haunts me. Like, and I don't think he's listening. If you are, Barry, sorry, but a fucking miss still haunts me. Like, that was incredible. Even the facilities out there that they had, that was the
big stadium, I'd say.
Polish Army Stadium was massive. Massive, yeah.
Was that the biggest one you were in? Like, besides the Aviva and all that?
Besides the Aviva, and obviously one in Linfield, Linfield Windsor Park is obviously massive. But I'd say that one is, actually, yeah.
Yeah,
but the atmosphere of our fans that night. The stand behind the goal was closed off. UEFA had that closed because of crowd trouble. So they were all in the stand opposite us.
Mm.
And I remember sitting on the bench. Oh, it was just incredible. The whole stand was bouncing. They were jumping. The atmosphere.
Intimidating night, yeah.
Probably would have been for the players, yeah. Probably would have. Who was I talking to recently about it? Was it Conor McCormack? I can't remember who I was talking to. And he was just saying, like, it was the best atmosphere. I think it was Conor. I think it was Stephen Beattie. It was one of the two of them. Best atmosphere they'd ever played in. Like, it was incredible. It was incredible, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, as you say, like, to go from the heights of that down to... No offence to Cavantilli. Like,
absolutely not. But it was a contrast, yeah. It was a contrast, yeah. I'll tell you a very good one about that hacking game, actually, like, you know. So there's a big thing in Europe, like, officials are fierce. Like, League of Ireland officials are like, people will give out them. They're all sound. You can go in, talk to them, have a bit of crack with them. Like, when you go into Europe, officials are such drips, like... And I hope I see them soon, but like, they're such wet wipes, like, they're so fucking serious. But like, they're all very, oh, we must play this. They want to play this thing called multi-ball. Do you know what multi-ball is?
No.
So, normally for League of Ireland game, you watch it. The fourth official has a bag of spare footballs.
Okay.
And they play this in the Premier League a lot. It's called multi-ball, where all the ball boys have footballs. Are dotted.
They're on top of a podium,
yeah,
or
they're
something.
Dotted around the pitch. And so ball straight goes, on. Yeah. So, it's actually up to the home club where the fourth official has the footballs in Europe or... It's multi-ball, but this was the hacking game. This fourth official, we play multi-ball. So grand, we play multi-ball. So we had one up. Like, hacking were expecting to beat us, like. We were the underdogs in that game, so we had one up. I think it was into the second half, I can't remember. So at this stage, you know, we needed to kind of kill the game off. So I went down to Caulfield and I says, I start making the footballs disappear on the pitch. Yeah, do. So I started walking around the pitch to the ball, boys. And if the ball went up the other end, I said, give me the ball. And I fucked into the crowd, just over the advertising party. I said to the crowd, leave the ball there. So I did this the whole way around the pitch. I said, if I go back to the dugout, no, they'd be looking for me. So I was down the tunnel watching the game. Next thing, the ball went out, no ball to be found. I was hiding behind Don Jones looking up. I could see the fourth official looking around for me, like. A little bit of skullduggery, I fucking stayed down there. Anyway, you won the game. I'm going to take credit for that, for stalling the game for a while. It was 8 years ago. No, it's too late to do anything about it. Yeah, that was, I'm going to, yeah. Yeah. Just those small little things to make a difference.
So after all the years of Forest, then no owner comes in.
Dermot came in, yeah. It was strange. It was strange because, yeah.
New regime. But you stayed there. You're kind of one consistent in the dressing room.
I'm only Joe Murphy, the doc, is there longer than me.
Okay,
Jor's there since 2003. Pat Dolan brought him in 2003, would you believe? And Jor is still there. So, yeah, I'm the only consistent, just the two of us, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Loads of changes,
but, like, it didn't affect my day-to-day, like.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know.
Carry on as normal.
It's just, kit needs to be hung up. It still needs to be washed. It still gets dirty, like. Doesn't make any difference. It didn't make any huge difference to me day-to-day, like, you know, to be fair. To be fair, so.
And, like, this is only, like, what, like a part-time job to you?
Oh, that's all, yeah. That's a hobby more than anything else. It's a gospel truth, yeah. Strange hobby, but yeah, here I am.
How do you balance it then with work, like? Because the fixtures are all over the place.
They're all over the place, yeah. Like, there is games I won't make, like. It's just as simple as there's games this year I will not make because I have to work. I take annual leave here and there. Obviously, balancing with family life is very difficult. And my kids know Bishop's on the inside out, like.
They're dragged out there.
Yeah. But they actually love it because if there's no one out there, they go into the gym and they start making obstacle courses. I'll go in and there'll be little trampolines everywhere and weight benches and they'll be jumping over them. So they sometimes like going out there. So it's just
a novelty.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm probably doing it so long that I'm well used to it at this stage. Like a lot of most of the work I'll do at home, like I'll wash and dry the gear and I'll just throw into baskets, bring it home, sort it out. I have the van at home with me so I can kind of get everything ready at home. If I didn't have the van at home with me, it would be very, very difficult. It's like a mobile kit room, like, you know, keep most of the stuff in that just makes it easier, like, you know. So.
In many ways, it's probably easier than the first division and the Premier Division because fixtures get moved because teams are in the Cup or Europe.
You're right. And actually, like, the only silver lining about the first division is the travel is grand, like. Like, you know, we're home from Treaty very early, you know, we'll have Kerry in a few weeks, McCroom bypass, fabulous. You know, we'll have Cove. Like, I don't want to be in the first division. None of us do. But
you're not up in Derry and Sligo and Dublin every week.
I'd rather be stuck on the M50 every second Friday than, you know, than being in the first division. But that's where we are, That's where we are. We just have to deal with it, like, you know.
Look, we're off to a good start.
Can't complain. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. No, it's been... Can't complain.
And, like, how do you find in adjusting to different managers? Or do you have any dealings with them?
Sure, I do.
I do, but...
Have they their own kind of routine going on?
They all have their own routine. They're all different personalities, but I always got on very well with all of them. Everyone...
You've been through about 4 or 5 at this stage, have you? Maybe more.
Yeah, probably have, yeah.
I know we got through a couple there in after John. Like, but,
Probably have, yeah. But no, they're all grand. Like, I'm supposed to look... They don't really have to bother me too much, and I don't have to bother them too much. You know, that kind of voice, so... No, they've all been good to work with. They all have their own little quirks and their own little bits and pieces, and I could tell you stories about all of them that I mightn't. or I might. No, I've never had... No, I always got on very well with all of them, and I was always sorry to see any of them go, because you don't see any fella lose their job at the end of the day, like, you know.
It's probably the same with players, I suppose, at the end of the season. You know that they're not coming back, do you?
Yeah, you do. You do. You do. You do, absolutely. But that's the nature of the game. Like, there's a turnover every year. Even... Like, we won the Dublin 2017, I think it was a huge clear out, like, which was hard to, which we struggled to recover from, really, because there was players we lost that we never ever replaced us. You know, such good players, like, how could you replace the likes of, you know, the Kieran Sadliers, these really guys, good. Like, you know, the Sads did stay for 2018, but it was really at the 2018 there was a huge clear out.
I suppose Kevin Shawney went, and then Stephen Dooley and stuff. There was a few went under at the same time.
There was. The Dooles, yeah, he left the end of 2017, didn't he? Went back to Coleraine, yeah. Yeah, there was, yeah, and the end of 2018, then we lost more guys, like, you know, and I remember, like, and I'm not going to mention his name because it wouldn't be fair, but I remember pre-season 2019 signing us, announcing a player, and I looked at him and went, oh, really? Given the previous pre-seasons, we'd been bringing in the likes of Conor McCormack, the Greg Bulgers, the Barry McNamees. There was one player we signed in 2019, and I went, really? I said, like, if we want a challenge, I'm not going to mention his name because it wouldn't be fair. I remember thinking, oh, if that's the kind of player we're going signing, I says, we're going to be in trouble here.
You kind of had an idea.
Yeah, that was 2019, and sure, like, it didn't go that well, obviously. Well,
that season was a bit of a disaster.
It was a disaster, yeah. Mm. Yeah, we had a very big squad. I know, because I give out squad numbers, and I had no gear left by the end of March, I'd say. Yeah, just, look, it was football, isn't it?
Football.
You know, just football, you know.
Well, look, we usually, every week, we ask the...
Oh, God, these are questions. Fans, these are the questions from me, brilliant.
Sending questions. And to be fair, Mick, I'd say you must have got the most. So either they're trying to test you now or what.
Or wind me up or something.
There could be a bit of that, I'd say. So, okay. So, Greg is asking, why don't the first team have two of each kit for half-time change? Is it a budget?
Probably is, ultimately. I think I alluded to it a while ago. That when we went into 2020 with a much reduced budget, that we had to cut back the costs were cut everywhere. Actually, if I recall, it was training gear, was the amount of training gear was reduced. So that's probably, I want to get back to the stage where they do have two shirts, but I don't think people realise how much work I have to do to make a shirt like. Like, the shirt comes to me with a sponsor and a crest on it, and that's it. So I have to
have to get all the names on the back?
Yeah, cut all the names, yeah. Normally over the winters, guys are signing, I start cutting their names. Like,
is that not sourced out to someone else or anything, no?
It used to be, but Howie wants me to do it. Cracking the whip there. He's a cruel bastard.
We'll have to get him out.
No, it's the stuff, most of it comes, like, we order most of the logos, but like, I actually do cut the names myself, a vinyl cutter at home, like, so. But there's a bit of time in pressing it all, like, you know?
I'd say so.
But yeah, we will get back to it, Greg.
So
he could have I know who that is now. He could have just texted me that and asked me himself, like.
Well, Dan kind of wants to know, what motivates you to keep going? He said it can't be easy, especially in this climate.
I often wondered if I walked away, would I miss it? And honestly, I'd say I would. I just I like it. I enjoy it. Why, I don't know. There's something wrong with me, but I do. I just enjoy it. It's, yeah. Yeah, it's nice. I don't know. It's just nice to be involved, you know. As I say, it's a bit of a hobby for me too, you know. It is tough sometimes with family and work and stuff, but yeah, I just enjoy it.
You enjoy it.
I don't know why.
Shane wants to know, will you do his washing next week while his mum is on holidays?
Shane knows. I know who that is now as well, and he knows damn well I've enough washing to be doing. He's alright. I can nominate someone to do his washing for him, but I'm not going to mention who it is. You know what I'm talking about.
So Thomas wants to know as well. He says, and you kind of think, I think you answered this already a while ago. He said, how do you feel about the white kit this season?
Oh, I loved it until last Friday.
It's a lovely design.
Well, actually, before this season, one of my favourite kits of all time was white. It was the 2017 away, so I do love white. It's fantastic. And this year's is fabulous. Like, but like, how he's going to keep giving me white kits? Like, he's going to keep, you know. I just have to deal with it, like.
So the next one is Carl wants to know, what is the one piece of advice you'd give to someone who is struggling with their confidence? Because you must have a lot of confidence being in this job.
Huh? Mm. Surely it was wash the socks. Any confidence to do that? I don't know. That might be.
I'm supposed to go into a dressing room full of players every week, maybe. I'm so used to,
do you know what? It's funny because when I went into the dressing room first, like as I mentioned, you had huge personalities and all the rest, and the demographic. I won't say it has changed because the age. What has changed is my age. Like there was a time a lot of the players were older than me. Now I'm talking to fellas there, and like they're born in like 06 and 07.
That's
and
the funny
so,
thing.
You know, it's funny. So don't really need any confidence for my job. I don't know. Maybe that person might be mistaken as to what my role actually is. But
probably. Somebody else wants to know, what player has the biggest kit size?
Biggest kit size? Oh, I don't know. The load, like...
It's probably all the same.
It's more or less
who was the biggest player you ever
had? There'd be fellas are gas. Like, Mick, can I have a small... There'd be fellas bigger than me looking for small shirts. They'd be like, are you for real, boy? I've tried them shorts on. Like, I can't get into a small. There'd be fellas there. They'd be bet into smalls. They're all smalls and mediums. There's no one takes a large shirt.
Isn't there?
No.
No extra large or anything? No.
There was a couple of players... You know, we'd meet a couple of guys back the years who were 6'3 and 6'4 who needed large shirts. Yeah, absolutely.
They were nearly stuck to them, so
there was that? There was two wore XLs, but I'm not going to tell you who they were.
Okay, we'll say nothing about that.
People will know anyway.
Another question coming in here. What's your least favourite jersey of the last 10 years?
Least favourite? Oh, 2020 home.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Didn't like
it. Yeah, Declan Carey will freak out when he hears this. No, it's just because it was a shit season. Bad memories. Like, okay, you know,
so you associated
with it. Listen, you associated with COVID, which was a horrible time for everyone. And from a football point of view, it was horrible. Like, every match was like a training game because there was no one at them. It was horrible. You know, obviously we got relegated. It was just, just burn it. I just want to see it again. We won't be hanging that in the Louvre, like.
So Jack and Ian are kind of asking the same thing, and I kind of said it a while ago. What do you use to clean the jerseys and how do you keep it so clean? Like,
Jeez, I had a bit of an education. I had to educate myself even more at the weekend because it was the worst I'd ever dealt with after a Cove game. Just washing powder, man. The machine does all the work, like.
Yeah, it's like an industrial machine, I'd imagine. It's like a
The 12 kg, everyone's saying, what is he on about now? A 12 kg machine, so.
It's not like the one that you'd have at home, kind of a thing.
They actually are. They actually are domestic machines, like. They're just big domestic machines, that's all, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But plenty vanish and plenty, pre-washes.
Would you have to have a few going at the same time for all the kits? Or can you stick them all into one?
I have three 12 kg machines, so I do get everything done in one. So everything that's used on a Friday night is in the wash on Friday night. Like, it's all hanging, drying on Saturday, so it's fine. Like, it's fine.
Okay, so we have one last tricky question. We asked Ciara last week, all time favourite 11 for Cork City.
Oh, do you know what? I heard you asking her that, and I said, if them fuckers ask me this now, I'm really going to struggle. Like, all time. Since the start,
or even in since your time as kit man or involved in the club.
No, I'll just go. I remember actually myself and Biscuits, Phil Harrington, had this conversation one day. He was travelling with me in the van. Oh, it's so difficult, man. So many good players. So many.
Be on goal.
See, I was thinking about this during the week, and if I don't give it to Nulls, he'll definitely ring me, like, but I'm going to give it to Mick Devine because I'm going to give it to Mick Devine for two reasons. One, it'll piss Nulls off. But two, I sincerely believe if Shay Given wasn't so dominant for the Irish team around that 04 of that era, that he would have gotten early. He was phenomenal.
He was a great keeper.
Mick wasn't a big man, like. As goalkeepers go, you see some of her, he wasn't a big man. He was there for that fantastic European run in 04, that league winning team in 05. Yeah. So sorry, Nulls,
he was a great keeper.
He was, to be fair, like, you know.
Was your right back?
Oh my god.
Or your two full backs anyway.
I'm going to give right back to Hoggy.
Yeah.
Great servant. He was just so consistent. And the fucker, I played five-a-side with him about 6 weeks ago. Well, about 4 weeks ago. And he's still class. He definitely nutmegged me once. And I tried to get past him about 20 times. I think I got past him once. Like, he's still... Yeah, he was so good. He was a bit like the Dennis Irwin, wasn't he? He was so consistent. He never got a bad game out of Hoggy, like. Never. Really and truly, you never did. Left back... Kevin O'Connor was very good.
He's very good, yeah.
He was really good.
Especially that 2016 season.
He was brilliant. Yeah, bombing on and, you know, scored some good goals, important goals for us, even set pieces, like, you know, free kicks, yeah.
So
careful here because you let someone out, like, in
the two centre-back positions, this is a tricky one.
Jesus Christ, like, how do you...
So many great ones over the years.
How do you let out Decky Daly? How do you let out
Dan Murray? How do you let out Alan Bennett?
Mm.
How do you even, like, so Ryan Delaney was brilliant for us, you know? So many good players. My God. Even like Bones, he was only, Owen O'Connell was only in for a short while. He was brilliant. Great, remember, he came in from Celtic?
That's right.
Centre halves. I'm sorry, I didn't think of this more now, to be honest, because that's a tough one, man. It's a tough one. But I suppose the likes of Benno and Muzz, like, they were there at such a successful time.
Two captains.
Two winning captains. Huge personalities. And I suppose the fact I was interested in, like, the likes of Decky Daly, who I was mad about. Like, Derek Collin was probably one of my all-time favourite Cork City players. I don't think I ever told him. I actually had Collin 5 on a shirt when I was younger, before names and numbers ever existed. I actually remember sending him a picture of it recently. It's in my attic. But I suppose for me, I worked with Muzz and Benno, you know, and I've seen what they've brought to dressing room, so I have to go with them.
It's actually been such an important role for the club over the years. Most of the leaders of the club have played that position, if you think about it.
They have really. And like, I think, like, you look to this season, how important the defence is. You can see, conceded 2 goals, like, how important it actually is, like,
So, into midfield. Are you going to play 4 across, or are you going to play 3?
I don't know. Like, I'm tactically retarded, aren't you? I actually haven't a clue about football. I swear to God, I remember the first few team meetings and team talks I was in, I was like, what is he talking about? I remember Coffee was on about stuff, and I was, what's he talking about? I genuinely had no idea what he was talking about. So, me and football tactics, people are trying to talk to me about football, and I really haven't a clue, like. I don't know. Again, how do you leave out players, like?
I know.
That's the tricky, like, we had so many good players, like, how do you let out Patsy Frayne? How do you let out Dave Barry? Greg Bulger, Conor McCormack, these guys are just so good, great, like. Players. But I'm just going to dive straight in. I'm going to put Kevin Doyle on the right, I'm going to put Liam Kearney on the left. Cairns, you can pay me later.
Very attacking side here.
Oh yeah, but do you know what? You're on about even left backs a while ago. Murph. Do you remember that relationship Murph and Cairns had?
Oh,
and Murph would overlap.
Yeah.
I'm actually taking Kev out and putting Murph in.
Whoa.
Sorry, Kev. Kevin won't be listening. He won't care. Murph again, part of that very successful team.
That's right.
You know, those overlaps himself and Cairns. Like, when himself and Cairns got on the ball down the channel, the fucking whole place lifted, didn't it? It was brilliant.
Who's going to hold the midfield zone if the two boys are on the wings?
Like, are Greg and Patsy very similar players then? Like, you know, so do you want just one holding? I don't know. You see, this is how do you let guys out? Like, you know, do you put one of them hold? Do you put one there, one in a 10? Like, how do you leave out George in the 10? Like,
yeah, he probably.
You know. Again, because I work with Greg and I see the influence he has around the place, I'll put him in.
I put Greg in. So Georgie's your number 10?
Georgie's my 10.
And who are the other two then?
Front two?
Who's your 9-11 maybe, is it?
Again, like, you go back to how do you leave out the likes of John Caulfield? How do you leave out the likes of Pat Morley? You know? But then you look, how do you leave out the likes of Sean Maguire? How do you leave out the likes of John O'Flynn?
We've had great forwards.
Incredible forwards and goal games ratio and all this. And there's a very good friend of mine who was only here for a short while, and I'm not putting him into it. Kieran Kilduff, I'm not putting him into it because he'll love it. So it has to be Finney and Shawnee. Has to be. They were so good.
They were outstanding.
I know Shawnee was only a year and a half here. But for me, Finney is our best striker of all time. He is, like.
Loads of people have said it, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant. Like, I mean, he was so unlucky with injuries and stuff, but when he got in the ball, the place was just, Finney, outstanding.
I remember, was it Noel Mooney? He was telling me one time, he said, the best player he ever played for Cork City, he said, was John O'Flynn. He said it's amazing that he didn't make it all the way to the top.
I'd probably just injuries came against him. I remember. Do you remember that? I remember the date. It was the 5th of July 2002, and I'm really showing my age. That first game against Shells. Remember we won 3-0?
That's right, yeah.
Finney scored twice and Georgie scored once, and no one knew who these guys were.
No, they came back from England.
After some. Was it the ITV digital deal collapsed or something? And it was a huge amount of money went out of the Football League, and all these guys started coming home again. Remember that Shelburne game? Like, who are these guys? Like, we were after thumping Shelburne 3-0 home. They were the champions that time. Like, it was just incredible.
And local lads and everything.
Local lads, yeah. It was just.
That's a good team. That is my
controversial 1-11. Yeah, do you know what? No, I'll go.
I won't ask you who the manager is.
No, I don't. I'll go.
Manager this time.
I'm going to be the manager. I've nearly done everything else at this stage. Jeez, I nearly ended up. Do you remember this? I think I told you that story about the time I nearly ended up on the bench in Derry, no?
Yeah.
Did I tell you this? No, so I mentioned 2010 when the whole thing was coming together, 13 games to go. And
that's right.
What I didn't realise is there was fierce work going on in the background trying to get players in and all this. And
Sean O'Connell rang me one day. He says, how's it going? Grand, yeah. I says, yeah, you're busy. Oh, we are, yeah. He says, tell me, are you registered to play for anyone at the moment? I says, no. Would you sign for us and sit on the bench in Derry? I went, oh, you can't be serious. He says, so what happened was they basically had a 1-11. They had a starting 11. But someone in the FA, who will remain nameless, had suggested, get a couple of supporters who look like they can play. I can't play, but I look like I could play. And just sit them on the bench and just fill out the bench with them. And I was like, oh my God. I said, look, I'll do it if you want. Now, typical, I went into work. Do you think I could get the Friday night off work?
It could have been the moment. Like,
it could have been the moment. Bench. Like, but as it happened, they didn't need me. They got a few actual footballers in.
Been a great one to tell the kids, like.
Oh, incredible, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I was on the bench for City.
Almost. No, I sit on the bench and over to somebody to pick up the bibs when the lads fuck them on the floor.
Well, but if Tim is listening to this, he could throw in, maybe, just in case.
No, Tim, don't. definitely don't.
Five-a-side football there, like, I know.
Ask Coggy, he'll tell me now. He'd say, definitely don't. But I actually played with Fergie, I don't know, a few weeks ago, as well, actually.
Not a great player, Fergie. In the early days of the club.
Oh, he was brilliant, yeah. Fergie had to retire, I think. He got a bad head injury at home, or a bad knee injury or something. He got a bad injury in one game and he kind of had to retire after that. Fergie was a fantastic player. Played with him a few weeks ago as well.
Amazing, yeah. The great players over the years.
Oh, jeez, we were spoiled. Like.
That's the good thing about this podcast. We're going to probably get to talk about some of them over the years. And I know some of the younger listeners, they'll be like, who are these lads? But it's good to get the history.
But it is, and even for the likes of me, I'd love to hear the likes of a Dave Barry, the Patsies, all these guys. I'd love to hear them on a, you know, because to hear the behind-the-scenes stories from that era that I didn't know. Now I have all the behind-the-scenes stories from the last 10 or 12 years.
Which was a part-time era.
Mm. Yeah, very much, yeah. Like, what they achieved, like... We always go back to the Bayern Munich game, like Davy Barry out doing plumbing jobs and then scoring against Bayern Munich. Incredible, like
fixing a tap one day. That's it, you know, like against World Cup winners.
Yeah, what those guys achieved, like playing part time, was just phenomenal. Like you know, really was.
Not a club, you know, 40 years, but phenomenal history.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah,
you know,
fantastic,
for such a young club, like I mean,
for such a young club, yeah, like three league titles for a club this, you know, in the city the size of Cork is. Should be better, like.
I suppose.
You know, and do you know what really sticks with me a small bit is, like, 40 years, like, and we've had our ups and downs financially, like, and we still don't. Like, the only thing the club own is a kit van, like. And that really annoys me.
Mm.
You know, that we haven't, that down the years that we, I won't say that it hasn't been sustainable at times, that we don't have more to show. We have great memories, but we don't have more to show for.
Would you blame for that, then?
I don't blame anyone because...
Would you blame the people of Cork?
No, how can you?
Difficult support or anything, no?
No. But you can't say that people of Cork are fickle because supporters of sport everywhere are fickle. That's not people go on about... No, you can't because any winning team will get backing, but any team that's not doing well won't, you know? So I don't think it's any one individual's fault. At the time, like even the time I was on the board, why didn't we, you know... Do more. We were firefighting the whole time, like trying to pay wages and just keep the thing on the road.
Yeah, you but even hearing that earlier on there, the fact that you were losing six figure sums, like, you know, that's crazy, like.
It's mad to think about it, yeah. Yeah, and look, we're still here, like, you know, we're still here. But
so it was bound to, probably, if you think about what happened in later years where the club had to basically be sold, like, it was inevitable because.
It was realistically.
It's not sustainable.
And when you look at the wages now, like, the wage inflation in the last years in the league is nuts. Like, I know what there's guys in Dublin on because they've told me. Guys, it's a sin, like. And I hate to say it, but is it the mistakes of, you know, the late noughties being made all over again?
Same thing,
or if guys are on mad money. No, look, the crowds are way up. The crowds are fantastic, like. You know, you see games selling out there, like.
Yeah.
Like, up to a few years ago, I never remember League of Ireland games selling out. No. They're selling out the whole. It's fantastic. But the wage inflation is nuts, like. You know, so... But there is clubs out there with good facilities, but it's there's not enough of them out there with good facilities.
So that'd be your one kind of wish over the next kind of couple of years or to get something that we own ourselves.
You know, our long-term lease, solid base, like, you know, solid base. It's kind of just...
A home.
Yeah, a home, exactly.
And even like, if it was a training pitch or something or whatever with.
And listen, Roden Bishopstown, we have been for a long time, and it's fantastic, but it's still not, you know, and McCarthy's are very good to us, the developers who own it, but like, it's still not ours, like, is it? You know, so, yeah.
So it's the long term.
Yeah, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you? You know, as it should be for all clubs, but geez, like we're very lucky with the stadium that we play in. Turner's Cross is fantastic, like, you know.
Probably one of the best in the country. Oh, it is, of course,
yeah.
World, anyway.
It is, of course, yeah. It is, of course, absolutely, yeah. And but it's like you go to other places there, I'm telling you, the dress rooms I have to try to get into and set stuff up, and it is just a nightmare, like. Just a nightmare. You just
it's no bigger than, some of them are no bigger than this room. I know people listening can't see the size of this room.
It's very small.
I saw Stephen, there are dress rooms that we've actually togged out in the hotel because they're that small.
Crazy.
Oh, it's nuts. Yeah. So, you know, people go on and on about facilities, but
something needs to happen.
It does.
There's potentially an industry in this country if
there's
a bit of investment in, even from government level and stuff like that as well.
A buy-in. And I think the last 2 years where the crowds have gone and the interest has really peaked in the league, that it shows there is,
and
you know,
done
there
it
is
before,
an appetite for it.
They've done it with horse racing and the dog racing and all that, where they've invested
big
in
money
and
continue to do so.
And they've got a return on investment off it. I think the same could happen with League of Ireland. There's enough fixtures in a year as well.
I think it absolutely could, yeah. I think it absolutely could. There's fixtures every weekend, which means, excuse me, you know, there's knock on work and business, fraud businesses around the place, you know, hotels and transport and everything. So there definitely is. It just needs, I don't know, look, I don't have all the answers and I haven't thought about it enough, but there definitely is scope for improvement. And I think if things can just get moving in the right direction, you'd like to think it would snowball, but you know, you look at the success that Munster Rugby have had.
Mm.
I mean, 20 years ago, I know, like,
there'd be no one at there.
No one at games. I know there used to be this traditional game between Munster and Leinster. They used to play it in small back pitch up in Limerick somewhere. Was it in Gary Owen or someplace? There'd be no one at
Cork Con and all them were bigger than Munster back in the day.
Like, they were very much so, yeah. Mm. Very much so, like, you know, so it probably can be. Now, look, Munster are competing at the top end of European competitions and, you know, obviously, will League of Ireland teams get to that point? Probably not. But you'd like to think we can
Get closer anyway.
So, yeah, who knows?
Hopefully, in the next couple of years, you get another trip across Europe. And we'll edit this episode then where you give an order about the fourth officials about the multi-bus.
You'll have to take that out in case they start listening. Yeah,
for now it's okay. Because officials are sound.
Yeah, no, they are mostly going very well, but I hope they're all listening.
No, thanks a million, Mick, for coming in, and best of luck with the rest of the season.
Yeah, thank you, appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, we were right with that, and there's plenty of stories there.
I'd say we could have got another 2 or 3 hours out of Mick.
He's calling Mac too there.
Yeah, yeah.
He knew his place, as they say. He didn't want to be too controversial, I'd say. He had probably some funny stories, I'd say.
I'd say now Mick is, that's nearly like a trailer, and Mick, we want to come back for a second episode now and unleash the other stories he withheld today.
Well, I'd say he'd be hoping for people to come up to him asking him other stuff, no?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even the questions that came in, we got more questions for Mick Ring than we got for anyone else that was in.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. Do you know what? It's another good example of, we've had players, managers, we've had ex-players, all that in.
Mm.
Mick has this unique perspective on the club from being the chairman, being the kit man, and being a supporter and being a volunteer. Like, he's had so many, seen the club from so many different perspectives and different aspects of the club. So he has stories from everything. Like the story about the bus to Estonia was hilarious. Like,
but even the story about having to let Tommy Dunn go, like, that's actually, you don't hear those stories all the time.
Exactly.
Like,
and when you hear
outside of Stuart Ashton's house at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I'd say it's true. Looking out the window and seeing Mick Ring outside your house at 1:30 in the morning, like, locking all the windows and doors. But stuff like that, like the Tommy story, like, that's a difficult thing for them to do.
It's
obviously
difficult.
Very difficult.
Somebody
for Tommy and his
yeah.
family. But to be the person, you know, nominated to deliver the bad news as well. And interesting as well, going back when he was kind of saying, on reflection, maybe it was the wrong time to do it, as the players, everyone was getting off the bus and it was very obvious what was happening.
Mm. And hearing how much they struggled back in 2013 as well.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that at the time, you know.
Neither did I.
You're sitting in the stands, you don't know these things, like.
Exactly. Even going back, to be honest, like, going back to when before that, when the winding up hours and stuff happened, and when, like Mick said now, when Rory was on the news saying Cork City is no more, effectively, I was kind of just in the stands at the time. I was there to watch football. I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention, so I didn't really understand what was going on myself.
And that was nice, he mentioned all the key people at the time.
Exactly,
like, you know?
And having his insight there on kind of behind the scenes and steadying the ship, getting the ship back in the water and steadying the ship then, really interesting. And that's kind of the logic behind bringing people like Mick onto the podcast, because not only gives a look behind the curtain in his current role, but what happened before and how we got to where we are now. I know even Mick alluded to it, we got out of the first division, we thought we were home and hosed, and here we are back in the first division. No one's happy about it,
yeah,
but we've overcome it before. We need to, and we will hopefully overcome it again.
And I know, like, you know, this is a different style podcast. Mick mentioned League of Ireland and the extra time and all these, like, I suppose us as a club podcast as well, we are reflecting on 40 years of the club. The club is 40 years this year, and it is important to kind of look at different milestones. And I know we've mainly looked at the recent history, but we had Ciara last week talking about the cup final in 2017, what that was like for her, or even the early days of when they became Cork City and things like that. they're all important as well. You know, we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for all the different things that had happened
previously. Exactly. Everything that's happened has led us to here. And there's a lot of people from the history of the club. Mick mentioned a few there, like Patsy and Dave Barry. These are all people we want to have on the podcast at some point, and we will have them on.
And we have a nice mix in listeners as well. We have young, but we have older listeners as well.
Exactly.
And I know the older listeners would love to hear some of the older stories.
I actually had someone come up to me at Turner's Cross on Friday asking if we were planning on getting players from the late 90s, early 2000s on. And we do. We have a list of names that we want to come on, and they're very high up on our list, and we'll hopefully get them on over the next couple of weeks. As you said, Stephen, like, we have a lot of stories to tell from the 40 years of the club. There's still stories being written now that we can tell in another couple of years.
So obviously we're mixing that with what's happening at the moment.
And exactly, yeah. These kind of podcasts as well, especially the guest interview, they're almost timeless. Like, you know, if you're listening to this down the line, you can kind of skip the couple of minutes where we're talking about the match and just listen to the story from the guest, which people seem to be doing. The older episodes are still getting listened to now. I know we're only 9 episodes in, but some of the stuff is, you know, might be a month or 2 out of date now.
There's a thing called Chartable, and you can see which podcasts have been listened to. And I see Malik's one there from a few weeks ago was starting to get listens again.
Yeah.
And so obviously
it's interesting, isn't it?
It's amazing how things get just pick up all of a sudden. But you know, that's, you know, people go back, they're busy lives. I do that with podcasts all the time, where I might listen to 2 or 3 in a row, and then I forget about a podcast, and it maybe doesn't come up on my Spotify for a while, and then you listen to one, then you say, I missed that episode. I listened to that again.
Yeah, you catch up.
That's what we're doing, because if we constantly just talk about what's happening right now, it's going to date very fast, probably. Like, we're just to kind of give people an idea, because we are talking about fixtures, but it's only, what, maybe 20% of the overall thing. But I suppose we should talk about what's coming this week. You mentioned earlier on, an away fixture to UCD, but hopefully a home fixture to UCD as well.
Yeah, so it's UCD away on Friday. We've already played them. We've played everyone now, so this is the second game against them. We won the last one. They've been good the last couple of weeks, and this is, I know they're third, but this is a top of the table clash as such. So it's an interesting one. The women's one then, we spoke about it earlier. As of now, it's scheduled, it's on the calendar to happen. We'll know more over the next couple of days, but another busy weekend ahead.
So the most important thing is to keep an eye on the website, you know, keep an eye on the socials and stuff like that, just to make sure that my fixtures are going ahead, if there's changes or anything like that.
Exactly, yeah. Look, we'll keep people up to date. Look, there may be something out by the time this podcast comes out. You could disregard everything we've said up to now. We could already have news on it. But keep an eye on, as we said, the website, social media. We'll bring you an update as soon as we have it. Just from Mick's interview earlier, there was an interesting question put to him about his least favourite jersey over the last couple of years. That can be this week's question, the Spotify
least of all section, time, so. Least favourite of all time, maybe.
Yeah, all time. I think Mick's was the last couple of years, but our question to you this week is, what's your least favourite Cork City jersey of all time? It can be home, away, third, goalkeeper jerseys even, if you have a picture of it and you want to send it to us. Yeah, just let us know which is your least favourite.
That's a good one. Good one to finish with too.
Yeah.
And so hopefully we'll be back, and hopefully we'll be still top of the league next week.
Hopefully.
And we'll have another guest fee. So we'll be back with episode 10 next week. Whoa.
Yeah. Double digits.
Double digits.
We're still here.
Yeah. So are we through quarter of our season as well?
I think we are, yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. So talk to you next week.
We'll see you next week. And as always, a huge thanks to our charity partners here at the Crown Centre for the use of the podcast facilities. And if you haven't already, make sure you're following us on Spotify. Leave us a rating. Give us your feedback if you enjoyed the episode or if you didn't. And we'll see you next week.